Capital A.
It's CKUT. It's 90.3. And we're going to be back next week with another episode of...
And Did You Clear the Space?
So until then, take care, be safe, and have a good week.
All right, take it easy.
Giza, and you're listening to CKUT Montreal Community Radio. This the crib right here, so shout outs to every station on here, and shout outs to you, the listener. Don't go nowhere, we'll be right back.
What's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Brown Sugar, Faith Evans, Big Moose. Brooklyn is in the building. Hell, we own the building. Yeah. Y'all just paying rent, see what I'm saying? Listen, now honey, check it out, you got me mesmerized. With your black hair and your fat ass thighs. It's the way you hold it down to make my nature rise. You got me in the boutiques picking out your size. You make me push it and I can't get it out my mind. It's that body, I can't get it out my mind. Give it up, mind, know that you're down to ride. Hit the dance floor and bounce your hide. You got the bounce of mine and let me know when you're down to slide. I'll tell Ab to swing around the ride. I'll show you how I will grind. I make it splash like a thousand times. I'm like the stars falling out the sky. Big Moose, Flocko, make your waist get close. Make it green get smoke, make your cat get stroke. Me and Faye make the track get dope. We stay set and pace in the race, now let's go.
Brown sugar, won't you give it to me? Come on, baby, won't you give it to me? Make it hot like it's supposed to be. Brown sugar, baby, give it to me. Brown sugar, won't you give it to me? Come on, baby, won't you give it to me?
Power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though, ambition, flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, and sworn like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, what shouts you a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your fucking head. This that put the kids to bed, this that I got realness. I just kill shit, cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dark, I got evil, that rot inside my trouble, some heart inside my DNA. I just win again, then win again, like Wimbledon I serve. Yeah, that's him again, the sound, the engine in is like a bird. You see fireworks and Corvette tires skirt the boulevard. I know how you work, I know just who you are. See, use a bitch, your hormones probably switch inside your DNA. Problem is, all that sucker shit inside your DNA. Daddy probably snitch, heritage inside your DNA. Backbone don't exist, burn on side a jellyfish, I get. Most definitely don't tolerate the front. Shit I've been through probably offend you. This is Parler's oldest son. I know murder, conviction, burners, boosters, burglars, ballers.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and for the month of June, we are doing a special where we are talking to fathers in the black community. With us this evening, we have Chef Sean Samuels, who started off his career as a pastry chef in the early 90s for about 15 years until the early 2000s. Following that, he began working in a reception hall as a head pastry chef and a cook, eventually working his way up to the number two chef in the hall after only a couple of years. At that point in time, his love for cooking grew even stronger. He continued working his way up to head chef at the reception hall and simultaneously started his own company, SNS Catering. SNS Catering took everything Chef Sean had learned and combined it with his Caribbean roots to create a fusion cuisine second to none. It was hard in the beginning running the business at the same time. He had a lot of support from his wife, his children, and friends. And during that time, SNS Catering created its annual event, Thank You Mama, and went on to be much solicited at various events in the artistic community, having both booths at events by Mad Poetics Productions, the Salon de la Femme Noire, and many more. After 10 years in the business, the impact of COVID-19 slowed things down dramatically, and recovery had been a steep challenge. Over time, SNS Catering innovated their services. The first step they took was creating weekly meal prep menus with Chef Sean's unique blend of Caribbean fusion gourmet dishes. It started off slowly, but gradually more and more people came to love the experience Chef SNS Catering provides. And not only do they offer weekly meal prep services, but also a four-course gourmet experience for all your major holiday and celebration needs. So that's Valentine's Day, Mother's Day, Father's Day dinners, Thanksgiving, Christmas meals, and everything in between. So, you know, you got to follow Chef Sean on social media. But for now, we're going to talk to him. Chef Sean, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us this evening. How are you doing, my brother?
I'm doing well, my brother. How about you, man?
Hey, you know, I'm hanging in there. It's good to be it's good to be doing this series. Like, I really, I find that... you know, as a black father, you're a black father, I'm a black father, we don't hear our own voices enough out there in public. And we don't talk about what we're going through publicly. Like, we might do it with our close friends and family, but, you know, I feel like we should start breaking those barriers and breaking those myths and everything. But before we get into that, you know, for 2020, and most all of 2021 and a good portion of 2022, we've been in this pandemic situation. You are a caterer, and that like requires you to actually go out and meet people, and like part of your business has to do with interacting with people. How has that been? And you also have a family. You have a large modern family, you know, like it's not, you know, most people are like two kids is enough, but you were just like, I want me a big family. So
I have six, I should say we have six kids, mm-hmm. which is me and my wife, me and my beautiful wife that you had. We have six kids altogether. Yeah. Most of them are pretty much grown now in their 20s. Just my little guy, he's just 14. So, but we're blessed. We have an amazing family. Very caring kids. They look after each other. If I'm not there, I don't have to worry. I know they will take care of each other because that's how we raise them, and they do a very good job in doing that. Look at taking care of each other, which is a blessing for me. It gives me a peace of mind to know that that's what we instill in them, and it's there. And to see it come out in how they take care of each other, it's really a pleasure to see.
Amazing.
For COVID, first of all.
So...
That's all I gotta say.
Big
because for me, I remember it was when it started, that February, March month, I was booked. I had events booked. I'm ready to rock and roll. I'm in a good spirit. I'm hearing about COVID in the back of the ear.
Yeah.
Slowly, everything started to creep in. You hear it in China. China's going crazy. Right. And it started to creep in slowly. Then you hear the prime minister said, all who's out of the country, come home. I will never forget that statement. And I said, if the prime minister is telling you to come home, something is seriously wrong.
Yeah.
There's no way in hell they would go on television and say that unless it's a major, major problem.
Yeah.
Within a week from being busy, because I had like catering events that I had planned for Concordia, because I make for Concordia, I have one of the departments I make lunch for every other week. Shut down. Period.
Yeah.
No student, no one going home from like from 100 to zero within a week.
Wow.
And I was scared.
Right.
Because as a business person, that's my only source of income. I was scared. I was panicking. I'm like, okay, how the hell am I going to take care of my family?
Yeah.
And for the first month or so, it was extremely stressful.
Okay.
Especially being in the food industry. We didn't know what to happen. How are you going to take care of yourself? Normally, as a self-employed person, if you don't make money on your own, you're in trouble. You have to figure that out.
Yeah.
Because there's no unemployment for being your own boss. There's no unemployment for being self-employed. So when the government stepped in and said, we're going to help take care of the self-employed and people as well, that would alleviate a lot of stress for like a week or two.
Yeah.
I had to decompress because I didn't know. I don't know what's happening, how long it's going to last. At that point, nobody knew.
Yeah.
So everybody thinks it's going to a month or 2 months or 3 months down the road, everything's going to be back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
So that we didn't realize 2 years from now, 3 years from now, we're still going to be in that same situation. So we're trying to figure what the heck to do. So for me, I'm uncertain. It took me a good month or two to get my footing, because what am I going to do? I dabble here and there in meal prep. I never really did it. I never really focused on that, because that wasn't my major goal. I was more like larger groups and stuff like that.
Yes.
So I started doing it a little, get a few clients here and there. Yeah. And they like what I do. And I'm personally trying to figure my way through the meal prep as well. Meal prep, people say, look, oh, it's easy. It's not as easy when you try to scale it as a business. It's much more complex and difficult.
Yeah. So, and also making it affordable as well.
But that's the key right there, because you can't, you have to make it affordable for people, because a lot of people are out of work, a lot of people are uncertain, people I don't know what to do, they're panicking, and all of these different things that comes into play. So I had to figure all of that out on the fly.
Yeah.
And then to work all of that in and figure that out and not know what's going to go on with the other part of the catering business, that's you basically creating a new entity in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to figure that out, and I took time to work through it and start scaling it slowly. And then it started to work, and it became very successful.
Yeah.
And I'm like very impressed. That's like at some point it comes in waves at times,
mm-hmm.
because in the summertime, everybody wants to be out, you know?
Yeah.
So everybody's ready to go out. And I'm like, okay, I understand. That's when we as Montrealers, this is when we come alive, like from April all the way to September, October is when the city comes alive. The festival starts. We feel like, okay, it's time to go here, time to go there. We've been locked up for 4 months. Okay, we're ready to go.
Yeah.
So imagine me locked down for like that long period of time. And it started to work. And then at summertime, it was a little bit more quiet, which was like kind of expected because of our nature and living in Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did like, what's it called? The festival, the Monde. During the summer, the weather was terrible.
Right.
It was a good opportunity to do it, but it like people were so uncertain what to do. It wasn't a success for me personally.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it was a difficult festival, but it was good. I did it because I want people to see that I'm still there. I didn't close my business. I think that's the very important part, that people need to know that you're still there.
Yeah.
And even though you advertise on social network and stuff like that, you still need to be out in public, meet people, because I'm a very personal person. I like to talk to people, I like to meet people, I like to interact with people.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to be out there as much as I can to meet people and stuff like that. So that was my first step in when it comes to the business in COVID. The second step, it was to take care of my family.
Right.
Because to me, what I do on a regular basis, on a daily basis, is make sure that my family's taken care of. Like my sons, my daughter, my wife. They come first before myself. I always try to put my family first before myself, because once I choose to have kids, there was my number one responsibility. I could figure myself out and do stuff for myself after.
Right.
If they're not good, I'm not good as a father. So making sure that they understand what the situation, make sure they're good. And also what was very important to me was creating the house, let the house be quiet. And what I mean by that, no tension in your house.
Okay.
Because if you're going to be stuck in your house for a long period of time altogether,
okay,
you have to be able to be happy to a certain extent and not to be stressed. It's already a very stressful environment right now with so much unknown.
Mm-hmm.
So it was important for me to make sure that everybody is in a good space and not create unnecessary stress.
Gotcha.
You know, so for me, that was the most important thing that I had to do, because on a regular basis, sometimes we have stress in our normal life because of whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
But then imagine putting yourself in a box for months and months, and then say, okay, live together, not be able to do what you normally do.
Yeah. You can't go outside. Sure. Everything is inside. You go outside, you have to mask up this, that. You have to basically be locked up if you go outside. It really can be very challenging, and with different personalities as well. And being used to like having breathing room where, mm-hmm. you know, you go out to wherever your business is or wherever you go to on a regular basis and spend most of your day. Or if everybody else leaves and you have the house for yourself to do whatever you have to do, that's changed. So now everybody's in this, it's almost like a pressure cooker.
It is. that's exactly, that's why, for, like, I didn't think about it as a pressure cooker, but I think of it in a similar sense. Like, we're all in that, this, these square walls.
Mm-hmm.
And to make these square walls as comfortable as possible, which is, like, making sure that their state of mind is good. Like, every so often, we will sit down and have a conversation about anything. With my kids, they know, I talk to them about anything.
Yeah.
It is about, I have five boys and one girl. Even my girl, my daughter, I talk the same way I would talk to my sons.
Mm-hmm.
The same way I would talk to my daughter. I don't try to, yes, she's a girl. And I do, they do have like a little bit difference in how I would speak to her when, because she's, as a woman, I have to speak to her in a certain way when it comes to men. And as my son, I will speak to them in a certain way when it comes to women. But we don't have like a very different conversation. Oh, your sister's here. Let's not be a certain way. It's the same exact way.
Right.
She's as crazy as all of us. So, so like when a boyfriend have her, the boyfriend's going to have a girl who understands boys. You know, because she grew up, she's the oldest one and she have younger brothers. So she's used to having boys around her. So it's normal for her. Like when she goes out and she has friends with boys, or should I say men, which men, you know, like it's normal for her.
Right.
So sometimes my wife said, "Oh, we need more female energy in the house." It's like you have too many male energy. Like that's what we have, you know. So it is what it is. Blessed. I always tell people I have very good kids, and I'm truly blessed to have good kids. You know, they do things sometimes that get me upset, but that's normal. That's supposed to happen. But overall, I would say I'm a very blessed man when it comes to my kids and my family.
I really appreciate your mentality, especially when it came to the fact that everybody was going to be confined together, because not a lot of people have that kind of foresight to be like, listen, we are going to be contained within these four walls. However many of the kids are still living with you, you know, and that can be, and you had the foresight to be like, that can become a problem. So we need to, as a family, not let this become a problem. If that's how I'm, that's how I'm understanding how you interpret.
But that's how I see it.
Yeah.
Because I try to see things steps ahead of myself. Because being a chef, it also trains you to always stay steps ahead of yourself.
Right.
Because you have to give yourself space for the unknown.
Exactly.
And that's how I think. That's how I train myself to think. That's how I learn as I go along. Because whether you're ahead of the family, you should always try to be the last person to panic.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing in the kitchen, because in the kitchen it's less emotion in the kitchen than it is at home. As home is more emotional to me. Yeah. And I do react in sometimes a more emotional way because it's a lot of emotion.
Yeah.
In a kitchen, I don't have that same emotion.
Right.
So I'm usually like the last person to panic and stuff like that. I don't even panic usually in my kitchen. If they come an issue, I say, okay, what's the issue? Let's see what's the problem we can solve. Mm-hmm. And then we move forward.
Yeah.
Because if you start panicking, everybody's looking towards you as the leader. Okay, how are you going to lead a team of people that like, can't trust you? Because they say you're always panicking. You don't know what to do. And then you're like frantic. It's like they're not going to want to trust you. They're not going to want to work with you.
Right.
A lot of the people that I work with, I've worked with them for like 5-10 years that say, Sean, if you need my help, I'm there for you.
Right.
So for me, that shows me that what I've created is an atmosphere of trust,
mm-hmm.
and people that believe in me, and I really appreciate it. And I always tell my staff, like, I can't do this without you guys. It's the same thing with my family. What I'm doing now, I can't do without my family.
Right.
Because when I need help, like my son will help me out, my oldest son helped me a lot with deliveries.
Mm-hmm.
My wife does my office stuff. All my, most of my office stuff, 99% of it is her.
Right.
So I have to give people, I always tell people, I don't do this by myself. Don't. A lot of times you see a chef and you think, oh, the chef does everything. No.
No. No.
As a first myth that I would tell people, don't believe that. Because for me, I need help. And I do ask for help. My wife helps me. My sons help me. My daughter helped me. She's already in the food industry as well. So she's just following my footsteps. I told her no, but hey, she wanted to do
it. At the end of the day, it's still her choice.
No, but that's it, because it's a very demanding business. A lot of people, sometimes you don't realize that. Like for me in catering, like we can work like 16-hour days easy.
Right.
And you could do that like days and days back to back. And before you know it, you don't see your family. That was at Christmas time before COVID. That's how it used to be to me. Like mid-November to almost the end of December, I sometimes don't see my family. I will come home.
Everybody's
I will shower, get something to eat, sit for like an hour or two just to relax, and go to sleep.
And then wake and up at 4 o'clock in the morning to do it again.
That's it. You don't have that family time because it's so physically demanding and it's so mentally demanding for you to give 16 hours a day to that. And you're on your feet for most of those time.
Yeah.
And then you always have different problems that you have to solve during the day. So it's a lot of work that goes into it.
Yeah.
So I always tell people, like, when you're celebrating, that's when I'm busy. So that's how it truly is. And my family, throughout the years, have supported me and understand that. And sometimes it's not easy, but that's normal life for us.
Right.
So my kids, when they know, Christmas time, my dad is gone, okay, no problem. We know. He's not like if he's going and partying and stuff like that. He's providing for us. So they understand that. And they don't feel no way about it. Because they know when I'm here, I'm here. So it's a joy for me.
That's very beautiful to see, because like your awareness, your self-awareness of like how impactful how your job impacts your family life is I don't want to say it's unique, but it's refreshing to hear, because not often do you hear fathers talk about that they know that there is an impact, there's a secondary impact. Yes, I'm bringing in money for my family. I'm making sure that they have a roof over their head, food to eat, clothes on their backs, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But not often do we hear a father say, this work, the consequence of this work that I'm doing is I'm losing time with my kids. I'm losing time with my partner. It's not something that you hear very often.
Yeah, but for me, I was conscious of things like that at a very young age. I don't think I did it purposely. Mm-hmm. Like say, I know this and I know that. It's just analyzing the situation, understanding that like I have to work to make sure that they're taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
My time, I have to give up my time with them for their security. Because quite a few times my kids went to birthday party, my wife had to go out by herself with her friends when she would like me to be there. Mm-hmm. And I'm working.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes she have said that, I feel like I'm a single woman. I'm going out with my girls. I'm going out with other people who are couples, and you're not there. Sometimes I don't like it, but she do understand why. You know, like I said, it's not like if I'm going to hang with my friends and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I'm working and I'm just to provide for my family. You know, and my kids what word can I use? To their understanding,
mm-hmm.
they understand that. I think it's also because that was normal for them.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like if it's something that just happened and then, where's dad? He's never here for us, you know?
Yeah.
And they understand that I'm taking care of them and mm-hmm. I'm working. And I have to, in order for me to give them what they want, this is the price you have to pay.
Yeah.
I have an expression, someone has to pay the bills.
Mm.
I know it's a normal expression, but it means different things, because if you don't, someone has to pay for you. It's basically a pay forward concept and thoughts.
Yeah.
Someone has to do it for you in order for you to get the benefit to get where you need to be.
Right.
Because at a young age, you might not understand that fully. But as you grow older and you become a parent, maybe you understand it better. Because even for me, as a young man, I didn't understand until I became a parent more.
Right.
And then a lot of things is like just things start to open up and you start to see life in a different way.
Mm.
You know, my mom and my dad had to pay for it for me. Now it's my turn to do the same for my kids. And hopefully they do the same for their kids.
That's amazing. Just in case you're joining us for the first time, we are speaking to Chef Sean Samuels. And this is a show that's part of our June special where we're talking about fatherhood and bringing the voice of Black fathers to the air, which is something that we haven't heard a lot of in recent times. We do have to take a quick break and play some music. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Yo, yo, let me ask, you ever been in a beef situation? Battle for your existence to keep your reputation?
Hey, I got some questions for you, fuckhead. some real questions.
Yo,
the fuckhead.
Ever called out a vet like, man, he finna get it? Then midway through the battle, you started to regret it.
Yeah, let me ask him. Yeah, it's time to ask him.
You ever showed up ready, but your opponent didn't make it? So you looked at his little like, guess you gotta take this, huh?
I got some questions, you fuckhead.
Yo, you ever blacked out on somebody to make them stop yapping? Open your eyes like, what the hell just happened?
Gonna ask him some more now. I gotta ask him some more.
Since 05, been about that action. Am I a fuckhead? No need to be asking. Nah, nah, I got some questions. Nah, I got some questions. Nah, I got some questions. Yeah. Are you lapped up? Are the homies slacking? Real ass only, no need to be capping. Nah, so many questions. Nah.
There's a lot going on in the world today. See how it affects Montreal's Black and Caribbean community. Read the Community Contact. News, features, opinions, music reviews, cultural events, and so much more. Our voices, our perspectives, our community. Published every 2 weeks, pick it up at your favorite community spot or visit us online at our new and dynamic website, mtlcommunitycontact.com. Easy to navigate and lots to enjoy. Archived issues also on the site and available on the web. That's mtlcommunitycontact.com. Stay in contact.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and I am speaking to Chef Sean Samuels. He's a friend of mine. I've known him for many, many years. I've hosted his event, Thank You Mama. I don't remember what year that was. I think it was 2012, I want to say.
Somewhere around
the 2010s. I've ordered from him during COVID. I celebrated Father's Day on my own and ordered the Father's Day meal. And let me tell you something, wax it down. It was for two people, and listen, that didn't last a day.
No, but that's good, man. That's good.
And so I'm bigging up his amazing meals, and we're gonna talk more about what he does, but this is part of a special. Sean is here as part of a special that I'm doing for the month of June, that we're doing for the month of June, honoring Black fathers in the Black community. Sean, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome, my brother.
Before the break, you were talking about responsibility and the responsibility you have. As soon as you decided to have children, you know, you put your head down and you were like, I want to provide a certain kind of life for my children. I don't want them. I want them to want for nothing, essentially.
Yeah.
And being a chef, you were very conscious of the fact that this is a kind of job that takes a lot of your time, and it also takes a toll on you physically, because it's a very physically demanding job. You're up on your feet almost all day. You can pull as long as 16 and sometimes even more, depending on the events that you're working on, hours a day.
I've done 24 hours before.
Absolutely. because I love to cook, right? Yeah. And when I cook for people, they enjoy my cooking, and they're like, why don't you become a chef? And I'm just like, I love the idea of it. And I did meal prep for a little bit. Like, I did meal prep for a few months. I had a couple of friends that were ordering from me. And let me tell you something. After, like, standing up on my feet, and because I wanted to provide fresh, you know.
Yeah.
So I brought as many fresh ingredients as possible in order to make the food fresh. Let me tell you something. The fresher the food, the more you're standing up on your feet. The longer you're standing up on your feet, the more you're tired at the end of the day.
That's where you become frustrated. You're like, oh.
And I was catering for two people. I was catering for two people, and it took me 2 to 3 days between going to my day job and then coming home and cooking.
First night
would be prep, then the second would be cooking. Then the third, because, you know, you have to let the food cool, and then you have to separate the food. Like, 3 days for two people.
Yeah.
My God.
I'm going to tell you a little secret.
Mm.
You know, is to cook for three people is not much of a difference to cook for 10 people.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just the difference is just a little bit more quantity. But the amount of work is pretty much the same.
Okay.
I've had clients that ask me, oh, can you make this one thing just for me? I said, it won't be fair. We'll have to charge you too much.
Right.
Because just for me to make a dish specifically, like, certain depends on what it is, just for you alone, mm-hmm. I can't just buy, like, just one thing for you, one thing. I have to go buy a bulk.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have to do that, I can't use it anywhere, I will have to charge it to you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always like a little tricky part. And I try to be as honest with my client as possible.
That's one thing I've always loved about you.
Yeah.
You're always very direct. You know, if I've asked you to do something for me and you didn't have the time, or it was outside of your budget, the budget that you needed, you were always very direct with me. And you said, Kim, I cannot do that for that kind of budget. And I was like, okay. And I might feel a little bit away. My ego might feel some type of way about it. But then I'm still calling you because your food is good. And if you're offering catering services, I'm not going to, you know, like, I love that about you. You're extremely honest. You're extremely generous with your food.
Yeah.
But this is about fatherhood. So the first question I want to ask you is, was it a conscious decision that you made with your partner, with your wife, when your first child was going to be born? When you conceived your first child?
Let me go back to that. Let me go back to that detail. I have to be very careful of the detail. That's my wife telling me I talk too damn much.
Let me give you another question then.
Leave it there. Leave it there.
Okay.
Because I always try to let people to know I'm not, you see me, but I never walk by myself.
Right.
I don't know if people understand what I mean. I come with a crew.
Yeah.
I try to explain that to people because no one man is an island, as the expression goes.
Mm-hmm.
We are a village or a community of people. And me, I come from a long line of a community.
Yes.
My lovely wife, when we first met, I know she was the one, I think within the first few months, which you just know. I don't know if people understand. Some people do, some people don't.
Mm.
And I knew I wanted her to be the mother of my child.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, she was telling me she wanted to have 8 kids.
Right.
She already had name picked out for her son.
Right.
So the first child we had was a girl, which was my daughter, Shia.
Right.
She was a conscious choice because I knew I wanted to, at that time I was 21, I wanted to have a child.
Okay.
Back in the 80s, 90s, you have kids younger. Not now, people wait till they're in their 30s.
Right.
I knew I wanted to have a child. My wife wanted to have a child. I think I kind of like started the process a little bit faster than maybe she would like.
Okay.
But we both said, okay, we'll do this. We decided to have my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She was born. I was lost. I was lost. Let me tell you some story of being a father. Most men may or may not say, it depends on your confidence of who you are as a person.
Yeah.
I was lost.
Okay.
I knew I wanted to be a father since I was like 16 years old. And I know I was going to be a good father because that's who I choose. Because I come from a man, I have to give this backstory as well. My dad was, to me, my hero.
Mm.
I didn't have no superhero, nothing like that. That was my dad.
Yeah.
He used to work long hours.
Mm.
Sometimes he was team 2-3 days. We don't see him. Come early in the morning, leave until whenever to take care of his family.
Mm-hmm.
He never play around when it comes to his family. So one thing I don't play with is my family.
Right.
Take care of his family, support his family, work hard. On the weekends, when he's off, he likes to go with his friends. He likes to drink. That's his relaxation time in the Caribbean. That's how it is.
Yeah.
That's my personal hero.
Yeah.
Ain't no Superman. Ain't no actor. Ain't no athlete. Mr. Terrence Samuels. That's my hero.
Yeah.
For me as a father, when my daughter was born, I was lost like a mother.
Yeah.
I remember my wife, my wife is always calm. Kim, you know my wife. She's never seemed to be too emotional, too high, too low.
She's always zen.
I'm a different person. I'm a much more hothead, younger than I am now.
Yeah.
So I remember my fondest memory is giving my daughter her first bath, like for me as her father.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was there. I'm in the bathroom, giving my daughter her first bath. My mom is looking at me. My wife is looking at me. You ever seen a man take a shower without taking, without showering? I'm talking full sweat.
Flop sweat, yeah.
Full sweat. On the arm, body, t-shirt completely wet. I never realized I could sweat that much without doing nothing. Giving my daughter her back, this little beautiful woman, girl in my hands, giving her a bath, making sure she's safe, making sure I don't touch her in her private parts too hard. I don't have those parts. Uh-huh. Making sure I clean every part. My mom telling me, do this, do that, don't do this, do that. I'm like frantic all over the place. Mom, I don't, And my mom is just there with this beautiful smile on her face, looking at her son, taking care of his child with what's the word there? It's like with pride. You see your son becoming a man in that moment, you know?
Right.
That's what I'm assuming, but that's what I can assume from her face.
Yeah.
That is my daughter. And knowing that once she was born, nothing was more important than taking care of my family. I stopped going to clubs.
Yeah.
I stopped hanging out with some of my friends.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped playing basketball because I said I can't afford to get injured. I used to play basketball almost every day.
Right.
I stopped playing basketball. I started working. I couldn't find work in my field right away. I went to work in a warehouse with my dad for like a year just to make sure I take care of my daughter.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, that was the most important thing for me, my daughter and my wife. Anything else comes last, not even second, last.
Yeah.
So beyond that, that was it. Then a year, 2 years later, we had my other son, Khalil.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came into the fold. You're getting used to the habit of being, not say the habit, but the getting used to the rhythm. Being a father, being a parent. You have a better understanding of certain things. Then my son, 2 years later, my son Jair came. Because we had kids for the first, 10, 12 years, almost every 2 years we had a child.
Right.
So I think the first three was like, okay, we're going to have three kids. Mm-hmm. Then we had another one, like, okay. Then we had like another one was like, okay, you know, then the fifth one come along, my son Farid, like, okay, that's that's it.
Slow down.
We
have five,
we're good. Then 5 years, 7 years has passed. 5 years and 6 years passed. We're like, okay, we don't need no baby clothes, nothing like that. We're going to get rid of all of it. Then, boom, my last son came.
Right.
I looked at my wife and said, how the hell did this happen? She's like, what do you mean how the hell happened? You don't understand how it works? I'm like, no. 7 years, you know? You have that seven-year window. We didn't have no child. We're good. We're getting used to having a family of seven. You know, like, everything becomes, like, normal.
Uh-huh.
And then, boom, he came, and then it was like, all right, cool. We're going to have eight. We're going to be a family of eight.
Right.
And for me, I love a big family. I want to have a big family. My wife wants to have a big family.
Yeah.
Because I come from a big family. She come from a big family. So it's, the house is different if you don't have that for us, at least in our imagination.
Yeah.
Having like one child was never part of our plan. We always wanted to have like minimum of three kids.
Right.
So it was always, that was always part of the plan. And having a large family for us is amazing. To see that bond.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if, when they're together, they don't need nobody else.
Yeah.
That's the, one of the beauties of my kids and that I see. Is that I will sit back many of times when they're all together and just listen. And I just look and I just smile because that to me is true everlasting life. I don't think you don't get any better than that in life. Once you sit down and see the joy of your kids, them, it doesn't get any better than that. Every single dream or fantasy you ever have, that's what I have when I sit back and enjoy my kids.
Yeah.
Nothing doesn't matter to me.
Yeah. You said earlier that you knew as soon as 16 years old that you wanted to be a father and you wanted to be a good father. Yeah. How did you come to that realization?
I don't know how I come to the realization. I don't remember how. That's something I just knew.
Okay.
It's like that same, roughly around that same age, I knew I wanted to be in the food industry.
Okay.
So it's just things that just, it just comes naturally to me in that way.
Mm.
I can't say like, this happened or that happened to make me have those feelings. It just came to me that way. You know, okay. I knew I wanted to have kids. It wasn't a question of, no, I don't think I do, no, I think I don't. It was always, yes, I want to have kids. Right. How many kids are you going to have? I want to have like at least three kids.
Right.
So that was just the question.
So the only question was the quantity, but you already knew that fatherhood was for you.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And
I had no doubt about that.
And within a couple of months of meeting your wife, well, your then girlfriend, now wife, you knew, okay, this is the person that I want to be with.
Yeah. I knew that I knew she was the one for me because she made me, I think, feel better about myself,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that she made me a better man.
Okay.
And I preach this to my sons, and I preach this to any man that listens to me.
Mm-hmm.
Every man needs a woman to complete them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have the right woman. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Like, for me, it started with my mother. I always tell people, my mother is my first love.
Right.
No matter what. Everybody, there's my mom, and then there's everybody else.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you're less important or you're not equal to her, anything like that. I try to make sure people understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that when your mom have you, is a connection that can never be broken.
Yeah.
And the way that a mother take care of her child is how that child comes into this world, how that child's become. And if you look at most men, we are very close to our moms. Why are we close to our mom in that way?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't have an exact reason why. I can only speak from my experience.
Yeah.
Today, my mom is one of my best friends. We have conversation about anything. She could call me and we talk like 3-4 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And we have conversation about many different things.
Yeah.
And I think those are probably also the reason why I want to be a father, because I would say I have very good parents.
Right.
And they helped me become the man that I am. You know, I'm very close to my dad too. We talk all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very close to my brothers and my sisters. So those are my upbringing, and those are the reason why I am the man I am today. I didn't just become the man I am today out of nothing.
Right.
There's a lot of things that come before I had kids, before my wife was there, to help make me the man that I am today. So,
right. And I noticed, I kind of noticed like a similarity between what you told me about your father and yourself. You said that your father worked very long hours, and you, at least pre-pandemic, worked very long hours as well.
Yes.
Like, this seems to be kind of like a parallel that you almost emulated in your life, whether it was conscious or not.
Yeah, I told my dad he cursed me. That's some of the footprints that my dad has done. Mm-hmm. I have followed his footsteps,
right.
And not purposely. It just seems to end up being that.
Well, we do what we see, right? Like, as human beings, I hate the comparison to monkeys, but monkey see, monkey do, right? Like, so you see your father taking care of his family a certain way, and it, mm-hmm. to your understanding, it works.
Yeah.
So it would only be natural for you to do something that is similar.
Exactly.
Even if you don't do his job or his career, you have your own, it wouldn't be unnatural for there to be parallels in terms of, you know, the amount of time that you spend.
I agree, but not every person see that way. Some people want to be completely opposite of it. That it all depends on the experience that you have with your dad. Because I've seen you post a lot of stuff with your dad. You seem to be also very close to your dad.
Yeah.
So I don't know if your dad was in the arts as well. What kind of person your dad? I've never had opportunity to meet your dad. So most men need the father figure.
Yeah.
Most women need their father figure as well.
Yep.
And it's a complexity, but yet we need each other, because a woman, when they're young as a girl, they need their father figure to show them what a man is supposed to be like.
Yep.
And a man needs his mom when he's young for his mom to show him what a woman's supposed to be like.
Yeah.
And those are steps that are being, in my opinion, sometimes are not being taken seriously. They're being taken for granted, you know. So especially now, sometimes it's a little bit more difficult, as mothers not sometimes have to be father and mother,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes father has to be father. So when you're not there, and do you have the same relationship with your kids because you're being absent?
Yeah.
How can you be a man? How can your child be close to you when you're never there? Your presence, you know, it's not easy that way. You know, and for me, one thing I tell people is that me being around my kids is extremely important to me, because I have to pass on the knowledge that I have to share with them.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't want to hear it. I said, I understand, but you're going to hear it anyway.
Yeah.
I said, you might not agree with me, you might not understand me now, but maybe in the future you will. My responsibility is to teach you.
Yeah.
I cannot learn for you, but I can teach you. And that's what I always try to do with my kids. That I cannot, I can only be myself to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I can be, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. How, so Black fathers are seen by the media in a certain light. It's only recently that I've noticed certain films like Daddy's Girl by Tyler Perry. That was one of the very few movies that had to do with Black fatherhood where like the father was like actively trying to be in his children's lives. But apart from that, there's this narrative, this continuous narrative of Black fathers being absent and like a specific, like always a spotlight on Black fathers, specifically an absence. What for you, was it important for you with your children to make sure that that narrative was not present?
I never really thought about the narrative when it comes to raising my kids.
Mm.
I wasn't about trying to prove anybody wrong,
right,
or anybody right. It was just me being
yourself,
who I choose to be,
yeah,
to my kids. Them, because once I choose to have them, they were the most important thing to me.
Right,
their life was important to me to mm-hmm. make sure that if anything ever happens to me, they have something to fall back on as the knowledge that I give them.
Right.
And they would choose to use that knowledge, whatever they want to do or however they choose to use it. I have friends, many friends. I have friends who some of them don't really take care of their kids the way I think they should.
Right.
And I would mention that to them.
Mm-hmm.
I have friends who are in a situation where because of the relationship with the mother of their child, it's difficult. I have a brother who's in a similar situation. Mm-hmm. I have most of my friends who are extremely good dads.
Yeah.
Even if they're separated from the woman that they're with, some of them are.
Yeah.
And they're going to tell me that Black men are bad. Why?
Right.
If you want to destroy the family, this is what I've learned from different point of views and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You have to start with the head.
Yeah.
You cut the head off, the body dies.
Yeah.
You know, that's basically what it is. It's as simple as that. You cut the head off and the body dies. One of my philosophy is, and some people will disagree with it, it's very old-fashioned.
Mm-hmm.
The man is the leader of your family. The man is the two things, the provider
mm-hmm.
and the protector.
Mm-hmm.
Take that away from a family, what's going to happen? The family will be destroyed.
Yeah.
A woman... My philosophy is, whether people agree or disagree, is the first teacher of any child.
Mm-hmm.
More before the father is the mother. The mother will teach you how to love,
yep.
will teach you how to be kind, mm-hmm. will teach you how to be the best version of you.
Right.
And if you take a mother away from the child, it's the same exact thing that's going to happen.
It'll destroy
all you're
going
to have is just a man. But you need both to be able to blend simultaneously those worldly experience, that emotion that you must learn to have
yeah.
and learn to control. Yeah. And also you need the physical being of a man, how to control that as well.
Yeah.
If you take one of it away, you only have one essence. And it's we're not one. Genetically, we're not one. We're put together as two.
Right.
So for me, a lot of people try to take away the mother, take away the father. It doesn't work. That's why a lot of relationships collapse, because you have to have both of them. You don't need to be perfectly in agreement all the time, but you need to come to a certain amount of an agreement what works best for the couple.
Yeah.
And especially when you have a child involved, it's not easy. Because you have, sometimes you want to disagree with a person. I disagree with my wife sometimes in certain situations. And I will let her know, listen, I disagree with you. But if this is where you want to go, let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have to give up what you believe and see what will come of it.
Right.
And if it doesn't, if certain things happen, then you will say, okay, let's try something else next.
Right. And if it works out, then you're like, okay, well, that one worked.
And but that's it. Because sometimes you think, we all have our egos. I have my egos and I'm thinking, yeah, I know best and this should be better. And then it doesn't end up working out. Then mm-hmm. what are you going to say after that? You're gonna argue with the person trying to be right still? No, my ego is not that big where I can't say, you know what, I was wrong. You are right, and let's try what you say and see what happens. that's just my philosophy of how I choose to live my life. I don't mind standing up for what I believe in, but mm-hmm. I'm not, it doesn't stop me from saying I'm wrong.
Right. Right. You don't have to burn. You don't have to burn with the mistake. You know, don't have to burn down with it.
But you're supposed to make mistakes in life.
Right. Because how do you grow if you don't make a mistake? It's just like when a baby is walking, you know, a baby is going to get up, take two steps and then fall down. But then what do? They get back up again. And they fall
like
down
right there.
And they get up and they fall down and they get up until eventually they run across the room and exactly. you are having a heart attack because they are running around all the furniture and jumping over stuff and you're like, oh my God, this child.
Yeah, you see, that's a father statement right there, guys. I always tell people that's if you want to make it understand the basics of you're supposed to fail, start at that point.
Mm-hmm.
When you were a child, you had to learn how to crawl before you walk.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it's as simple as that. But we try to make complications here. It's not really that complex.
No.
It's that we choose to add these different scenarios to it because if we want to be right.
Yeah.
So like when you just say it's the same thing with a child, I agree 100% because I've tell people I've learned more from my kids than I may think I've teach my kids them.
Yeah.
Because by looking at them, studying them, seeing how they do things, I adjust my way of thinking to suit their personality.
Yes, 100%. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Chef Sean Samuels of SNS Catering, who is a father and an entrepreneur who has been catering for well over 20 years, has been in a kitchen for well over 20 years, I think over almost 30 years now.
Yeah, 30 years. If you want to go back to McDonald's, you've been about 35 years now, man. Since I was 15, I was in the kitchen.
In a kitchen of some way.
Yes. I was born to be in the kitchen.
Yes, and he has joined us as part of our special for the month of June, in which we are talking to Black fathers about what they're doing, their perspectives, and so on and so forth. We do have to take a break, pay some bills, play some music. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
This flight with EastJet. Let's fast forward this red tape.
When I press play, you ejected. Boarding on this way now. Sitting next to an old plane.
Memories could switch lanes, so I'm sitting lazy with a new aim. We had food and two shots, then we got to my spot. This time I'ma get my hopes up, so real I need no makeup. Life is made of great gift, I mean you were so fantastic. Felt like it was magic, our connection was so instant. Time to leave our romance, we're side to side facing turbulence. Not once, not twice, we gave a chance. The zone we flown can stand a chance. I'll take my hand, last chance. We got so high, now we're landing. I'm feeling down the assistance, but there's no stopping.
Can we fly one more time before it becomes a no-fly zone? We'll go places we don't know. Let's fly away. Yeah.
Should have been on flight mode, cruise control in the front row. A glass of scotch with no rocks, with a new headset at a low cost. 6 o'clock, no scandal. I guess tonight let's gamble. Smooth just like a Land Rover. Then come back with new clothes. Trying to talk with the doors closed. It takes 2 not 3 to tango. How we got so damn low, man? I miss you like the rainbow. Smoothness now with the black box. If you ask me, it's great though. 'Cause every day was a new show. On loop just like a sample. Living life slow, eating mangoes in a place right that is not cold. And smile more, new payroll. I get a blue.
Yes, yes, yes. We're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial. We are doing a special this month for the month of June, whereby we're talking to different Black fathers in the community, and we have Chef Sean Samuels, who started off his career as a pastry chef in the early 90s and has now started up his own catering company and is, in the advent of COVID-19, had to reevaluate how he was doing things. So he had a Caribbean fusion gourmet meals that he was preparing before COVID-19, and now he's doing a meal prep that you can find on his social media. So along with the meal prep that he does weekly, there's always, of course, special events, special holidays and celebrations. We had Valentine's Day, Mother's Day recently, and Father's Day coming up. There's Thanksgiving and Christmas as well. So you can get in contact with Chef Sean because he always has a menu ready for those occasions. So Chef Sean, thank you so much for being here for this special celebration of Black fatherhood and, you know, real talk. When it comes to
fathers. I'm a troublemaker, right?
Yeah, man. But we got to keep it real because, you know, there's been a perspective on Black fathers for a long time that I think my father told me before he passed away. He told me, Kim, you need to control the narrative. You need to control the narrative of your life. And Black fathers, for a long time, I feel like we haven't control the narrative because there is this thing whereby we don't talk about whatever we're going through. Like when we first started talking earlier this evening, excuse me, you said that, you know, when COVID-19 hit, you had to just stop because it took a toll on you mentally because you lost business. We don't talk about mental health. Like, Black fathers, you don't have the time to talk about no mental health issues. Mental health what? You know what I mean? That's something that we talk about. But it's a reality that we go through depression like everybody else. We have our moments where we go into dark places like everybody else. It's just, it's not spoken about. And I think that we need to highlight ourselves. We need to control our narrative. And as a Black father, I feel it's my responsibility to use this platform to highlight our narratives and to speak about what's going on. Because if we don't do it, who's going to do it for us? Some scientist going to come and do research and be like, oh yes, Black fathers are... No. We have to speak out on what it is that we're doing and what we want to do.
I know what, Kim? Thank you. First of all, I think a lot of people need to give you your respect of a man that speak. Even like when you did Mad Poet Society, I came out to support my wife. Actually, sorry, I have to give, once again, I have to go back to my wife. I was giving my wife the credit that she deserved.
Yes.
She was the one that introduced me to you. You guys were friends before, you and I.
Mm-hmm.
And she's into poetry. She's a poetry fanatic. I'm like, okay, I'm a fringe guy. I come and see, blah, blah, blah. But your stuff. Especially, what was the one there, the dirty one there?
The Art of Performing Oral Sex.
Ah, yes. I missed the first one, but the second one, I catch you.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, but let me, mental health.
Yeah.
For me personally, I have different people in my life that have different levels of issue.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I should say anything, as they might want it to be private. So I'm just going
to speak. Well, we don't have to mention any names. You can speak very vaguely about it. Yeah.
I know somebody who had like a severe nervous breakdown.
Mm.
And this is somebody I never thought that would happen to.
Right.
And when I heard... Within 30 minutes, I was at the door.
Right.
Because I was shocked.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm there.
Yeah.
And him and I sat down. We talk. I catch up. And I said, okay, what happened? How did it come about? And we sit down. We talk.
Yeah.
To this day, we pick up the phone. How you doing? I'm good. You good? We talk for half an hour sometimes. Like before COVID, we used to get together. We sit down for hours and we have conversation about our wives, about our kids, about life, about our jobs, about this, about that, mm-hmm. our plan for the future, whatever. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Just talk about school. We can sit there, drink a beer, and we're good.
Yeah.
And that's how, as Black men, that's how we deal with our issues.
Mm-hmm.
Some, before there was such thing as mental health and all the words that we use now, we will stay together. I'm going to say that we will gather together and we will talk. Mm-hmm. About our different issues. It depends on the comfort that you have and the security that you feel with the person that you're talking to.
Right.
I think a lot of times we don't really tell our dark secrets is because is our insecurities about people thinking that we're weak.
Right.
It also depends on the environment that you grew up in. Like for me, I'll speak for myself personally. I'm not insecure in myself to say I know who I could have a conversation with and be able to be myself with.
Yeah.
I could come to that, go to that person. I could go talk to my brother. I could talk to my mom. I could talk to my dad. And I could say, these are my concerns. These are what bugging me. And these are things. And I will talk at you to them.
Yeah.
And I could talk to my wife as well.
Yeah.
And I am comfortable within myself to know if something is troubling me, I could talk to someone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to go pay a psychologist. If some people need to do that, by all means, go do that. If it's beneficial to you and your family,
yeah,
speak to somebody. Because if that's the way, that's the road you choose to take,
mm-hmm.
go ahead. Me personally, I don't do that because I know I can speak to, I have people in my life where I can go talk to and I'm comfortable with them, where I can open my soul and say, this is who I am.
Right.
I'm not a person who's like, I'm guarding my secrets and try to pretend to be something that I'm not. I try to be me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to be something else. And when I try to be something else, I'm like, no, I'm actually very uncomfortable being that, what I am being myself, with my flaws, with my mistakes and all of these things. Mm-hmm. I'd rather be me. This is who I am as a person.
Mm-hmm.
For me, one of the things I've learned as I grow and learned who my dad is as a man. My right. dad is he holds a lot of insecurities within his life.
Okay.
And he have gone through a lot of traumatic stuff as a young boy in his life.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're growing up in the 60s and 70s, maybe all men in general, I can't speak for them. I can't speak as a black man.
Yeah.
But as a black man, we had to be strong.
Yeah.
You have no choice. You can be weak in that society.
Yeah.
If you have to take care of your family, you can't say, well, you know what? Today I need a day off.
No.
There's no such thing as a day off.
No.
You have to get your ass up and you have to go to work. You have to take care of your family.
100%. Yeah.
For me, that same thought passed over to me. I'm a strong person because of these things. I'm a strong person because of many things in my life. I realize everybody deals with certain emotional issue or physical issue.
Mm-hmm.